A series of crimes by college graduates has dashed the theory that education solves the crime problem. I'll be back in a moment with the amazing facts about higher education and lawlessness. Hello, this is Joe Cruz in the Amazing Facts broadcast, facts which affect you. Several years ago, the dreadful crime of Charles Whitman shook the world. His brutal murder of 16 people shocked the sensibilities of upright citizens everywhere. And perhaps one of the most amazing things about the case was that this young man was an educated man, a university student. So the utopian theory that education is a solution to the crime problem was dashed to 1,000 pieces on the ground. The whole shortcoming of the philosophy, which was prevalent a few years ago, was that men fail to realize that education can't provide moral force. It can't change the hearts of sinful men. Only a knowledge of God can do this. And education in this modern age seems set upon the task of denying God and His rulership in the universe. So the whole moral force or anchor of strength to young people is torn away, and they drift aimlessly on a sea of atheism and godlessness. Probably the reason that militant atheism has gained such a strong foothold on the educational system of the land is that the theory of evolution swept the world in the latter part of the last century. The godless theory of evolution actually was in existence among the heathen of ancient times, but it took modern men of science who had fertile imaginations to crystallize it into a set theory that was to pervade all science. A number of men took part in formulating this modern version of evolutionary theory, but the prominent ones were Lyell, the geologist, and Charles Darwin, the biologist. Whole books, of course, have been written on the subject, but there are three main points that must hold up if the evolutionary theory is to be true. Here are the three basic principles in this theory. The first principle is that life must have arisen originally from inorganic matter. And according to this theory, in other words, in the dim, distant past, there was a time when life came from that which was not living. The second of these principles is that the more complicated forms of life evolve from the simpler forms through millions of years. Therefore, according to the theory, the species are constantly and gradually changing and progressing. The third principle is that all forms of life are progressing upward and improving through natural selection. This means that those who hold this theory believe, basically, that if an animal wishes for anything hard enough, he'll get it. To illustrate, in the far, dim reaches of the past, perhaps the snakes thought it would be nice if they should have legs, so they wished and wished and eventually turned into lizards. Now, that's a general idea, of course. It'd be nice if wishing really did make things so, wouldn't it? Well, maybe such are the principles that the evolutionary theory is founded on. Now, this theory is in direct opposition to the Bible story of creation that tells us that God created all forms of life, and He did it instantaneously and simultaneously. But the theory of evolution really tears down not only the creation story, but the whole basis for the Bible plan of redemption. If man is actually getting better, the Bible is untrue, for the Bible teaches that through sin men are getting worse and worse. The way this theory wreaks havoc with Bible principles is mentioned by H.G. Wells, the very famous atheistic historian. Notice his statement in his autobiography. It was only slowly that the general intelligence of the Western world was awakened to two disconcerting facts. First, that the succession of life and the geological record did not correspond with the acts of the 6 days of biological facts, pointed away from the Bible assertion of a separate creation of each species, straight towards a genetic relation between all forms of life in which even man was included. The importance of this last issue to the existing doctrinal system was very apparent. If all the animals and man had been evolved in this ascendant manner, then there had been no first parents, no Eden, no fall. And if there had been no fall, then the entire historical fabric of Christianity, the story of the first sin and the reason for an atonement, would have collapsed like a house of cards. So here we see that what is really involved in the evolutionary theory is the denial of every major point of faith in the Bible. The godless evolutionary philosophy was picked up very quickly and incorporated into the educational systems. The textbook, treats it as though it's a fact, when in reality it's only a theory, and a disproven one at that. So, in a century's time, the vicious teaching of atheism had almost completely supplanted faith in the Bible. Dr. Joseph Paden, a teacher himself, summed up the situation in these words. For several years, my experience as a teacher, first in public schools in Illinois, later at Northwestern University, and now at the Naval Academy, and my service as a naval officer during the late war, have brought me into close contact with young people from all parts of the country. Some very saddening facts have been brought to my attention with ever-increasing emphasis. Chief among these is that we Protestants, to our great disgrace, are neglecting to rear our children in the admonition of the Lord. Our neglect is so marked as to approach treason to our sovereign master. We're forcing our children to grow to maturity through a system of education deliberately designed to prevent their receiving a really accurate knowledge of the one person in history that it's most needful they should know the truth about. In our schools, our children are subjected to a vicious barrage of insidious propaganda, from direct but unproved accusations to slowly phrased insinuations denying the importance of our Lord. It sneers at His authority and His unique claim upon mankind. It scoffs at the truthfulness of His Word. It seems to aim at the erasure of the evidence of His existence as well as His power. It is constantly working to eradicate and destroy any confidence in our Creator and God that our young people may have developed. End of quotation. So, friends, we can see that the educational system is permeated with this theory. In the wake of this type of training, our country is caught in the throes of crime and moral confusion. It's no wonder that the young people go astray when their faith is so undermined. More and more children are being led toward crime as parents throw away responsibility. Selfishness is often the keynote of the day, and materialism the inspiration for living. God, in many instances, is not even accepted in the home. And concepts of morality have been relegated to the junk heap. Our generation, it seems, has allowed old faithful religious practices to slip into oblivion. And as a result, family life has been weakened. The nation has suffered, and many of its children have become spiritually starved. A godless home is built on the sand. It's an inviting breeding ground for moral decay and crime. And yet, unnecessary that all of it is, for the theory of evolution is really a still unproved hypothesis. It's the result of sheer guesswork and a misinterpretation of facts. Every basic assumption of evolution has been thoroughly disproved. Now let's take the first one we mentioned. This is the assumption that life must have sprung up spontaneously. The brilliant experiments of Louis Pasteur prove beyond any doubt that life comes only from other life. This is the citadel upon which modern methods of sterilization and cleanliness are founded. Science definitely proves that there's a great unbridgeable gap between the living and the non-living. So the very first assumption of evolution is totally unscientific. Taking the next assumption of evolution, is it logical to suppose that all life originally sprang from the simpler forms, such as the one-celled animals? Here's a statement from one of the world's most renowned biologists, Austin H. Clark of the Smithsonian Institution. And he says, quote, "There is no logic in the assumption that the early animals were of the single-celled or protozoan type. All the single-celled animals that we know are quite as highly specialized as are any other animals, though they are specialized in a wholly different way." End of quotation. Now, we can easily see then, friends, on the basis of this statement, that the foundation of the evolutionary theory is cut out, really, by many of the scientists of even evolution. There's no likelihood, even from an imaginary viewpoint, that all life stem from microscopic organisms. Another foundation stone of the theory is that there are no set species, but the various animals are evolving upwards into higher forms of life all the time. Now, this is directly contrary to the biblical teaching that the animals were to reproduce after their kind. Now, what does science have to say about the evolution of species, friends? Here's a statement from Dr. Bateson of the British Association of Scientists, and I'm quoting him now. He says, "Although we must hold to our faith in the evolution of species, There is little evidence as to how it has come about, and no clear proof that the process is continuing in any degree at the present time. The thought uppermost in our minds is that the knowledge of the nature of life is altogether too slender to warrant speculation on these fundamental subjects. Did we presume to offer such speculation, they would have no more value than those which the alchemists might have made as to the nature of the elements. End of quotation. Now, isn't that peculiar, friends? Although Dr. Bateson admits there is no proof for the theory, he still says they must have faith in it. The scientist derides the Christian for exercising faith, and yet here he has greater faith than a Christian ever had. Faith to believe a theory that every scientific evidence refutes. Mr. Austin Clark, who was quoted a moment ago, has something to say also on this subject of the evolution of species. And here's what he said. The complete absence of any intermediate forms between the major groups of animals, which is one of the most striking and most significant phenomena brought out by the study of zoology, has hitherto been overlooked or at least ignored. The amazing facts are, then, that the majority of scientists are still clinging to the theory of evolution despite the fact that it's biologically disproven. Well, friends, and of course it's scientifically unscientific, how amazing it is that the minds of so many are able to believe the philosophy of evolution and still deny the simple Bible account of creation. Now, it requires so much more faith to accept the claims of Darwin and his disciples than it does to believe the claims of Jesus and his disciples. The miracle that evolution requires one to believe is staggering to contemplate. The creation and development of the human mind and body purely through the accident of blind nature and blind chance, oh, that's too much to accept, friends. Even the greatest scientists have not been able to duplicate the simplest processes of tiny cells in the body. And yet they ask us to believe that our complicated eyes and ears and so forth were produced without any intelligent design. What faith it would require to believe that. What a contrast all of that is to the beautiful story of Genesis and its description of God's power in making man. Now, I know a lot of fun has been poked at the Bible story of creation by the evolutionary scientists, and they believe that really, creationists support the idea that God made every different kind and variety of animals during that first week of time. But this is not true, friends. No Bible creationist believes that God created every different kind of dog and every different kind of cat. He only made two of each kind back there, and all the different varieties have simply evolved or descended from that. Well, what a contrast, I say, to the beautiful story of the Bible. And now, this is Joe Cruz saying goodbye for today.